This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, thank you very much, Roger. And again, good morning to you as we come your way for our weekly get-together here on Saturday morning from 5 to 6 on WGN Radio. And another week of speculation and wondering what's going to happen agriculturally and trade-wise under a Trump administration. And it's amazing how we speculate as much as we do and really don't know what's going to happen until they make the announcement. And so we're going to be talking about that a little bit later this morning. Thanksgiving coming up next week, of course, and your Thanksgiving Day dinner is going to cost a little less than it has over the last 4 years or so. We'll talk about that. And then the markets, always interesting. And this morning we're going to be talking to Joe Camp with AgriVisor, who will share his feelings on the market now and the market ahead as we pretty much wrap up the harvest. Pretty well done, and apparently we've moved the harvested crop along pretty well. And, yeah, there is some grain that's piled outside in towns across the Midwest, but maybe not as much as people expected since this is a record crop production year for corn and soybeans. At least it is now. We'll get the final numbers in January when the USDA issues final crop production figures for the crop year just ended. But we want to talk about some other things this morning as well. Challenges on regulations agriculture and agribusiness will face under the new Trump administration. And we're going to talk to a lady with Crop Life America. That's the association representing the manufacturers of crop protection items for American farmers and world farmers as far as that goes. So we're going to learn what Crop Life America is concerned about under a Trump administration when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Kelly Bray is the Senior Director of Government Affairs with Crop Life America. I've been around this business long enough to remember when it was the National Agricultural Chemicals Association. Right. And I always enjoy history. When it comes to regulating your industry, give us a little background and history on that.
Sure. So the statute that governs pesticide policy is the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act. So not easy to say, but right. FIFRA for short. Yeah. And that was passed in 1947. So the pesticide industry has been examined and regulated for many decades.
Do you feel it's been overregulated sometime? Is that a concern of Crop Life America?
Sure, I think that is a concern, as well as with legislators or regulators, knowing what's in that statute and how products are used on the ground, I think is so important. And always with new legislators or new employees at an agency, that's something that needs to be talked about right from the very beginning.
And the other thing it seems they need to be made aware of is the constant research to develop new and better products.
That's exactly right. Within our member companies, Crop Life America is the national trade association for manufacturers, distributors of all kinds of crop protection products, not only for the conventional market, but also for the organic market. And all of those products go through extensive testing over a number of years, not only with the company that is creating that product, but also through the Environmental Protection Agency.
And the cost of bringing a new product to market is really, really high.
Very high, over $100 million, and the amount of time is estimated between 7 and 10 years.
So let's talk briefly about the new administration, a Trump administration, and he has said he would like to do away with some of the regulation process that we have that wouldn't change the quality. How do you think your companies will succeed under a Trump administration?
Well, I think there's a lot to be seen and a lot to be determined 2 days in. But we want to make sure that there is fair regulation. Again, through FIFRA, we've been regulated for 70 years, and our member companies are happy to go through that because that means it's an even marketplace for all. And they're also consumers of these products, and they eat food every day and serve that to their kids and grandchildren. So it's very important that these products are evaluated and looked at not only within a company but with an agency. So the fair regulation based on sound science is going to be continue to be important to us as we move forward.
You think that can happen under President-elect Trump?
I hope that no matter who was elected, that would happen. And I hope that we have a farmer voice in the administration. We look to that and expect that from USDA, but we want to see that even more with the Environmental Protection Agency. It gets harder and harder to do, but I think anytime you have EPA or other administration officials come out and talk to maybe our member company scientists or farmers who are using products to see those real-world examples, that's so meaningful. But you can't always have that conversation on the ground. There needs to be some insight there day-to-day in the office as well.
We are indeed a global agriculture. Mm-hmm. Is CropLife America global?
Absolutely. We are a part of the CropLife International Network. They are based in Brussels. CropLife America partners with CropLife Asia, CropLife Latin America, CropLife Canada, CropLife Australia. The problems that we are facing here in the United States sometimes are not all that different than what our colleagues are facing around the world. On a different note, though, we have some expertise that we can share with them as they're going through regulatory hurdles or consumer conversations in their countries as well.
Thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Kelly Bray, who is the Senior Director, Government Affairs for CropLife America. 19 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning on WGN Radio Chicago. And I want to take just a moment to mention the fact that we lost a good friend and that we lost a mover and shaker in the commodity market because this past earlier this month, Dwayne Andreas, who spent 27 years building Archer Daniels Midland Company into the supermarket for the world and the world's largest processor of agricultural products, passed away at age 98 this month at a hospital in Decatur, Illinois. He and his brother came out of Minnesota, and from 1970 to 1997, ADM, under his leadership, grew to a worldwide enterprise. The number of processing facilities, the number of items that were, well, used to make up supermarket to the world is just a fantastic story. The other thing I always enjoyed was his working the political field very well. He, I think, worked with the 7 presidents and world leaders, Mikhail Gorbachev and Boris Yeltsin, good friends with all of them. So he certainly left his mark on the world and particularly on world agriculture. Dwayne Andreas passed away, age 98. And also, let's look ahead to next week, Thanksgiving week, because now we begin the cycle of different trading hours. Next week, for example, markets will trade as normal on Wednesday, normal hours, but the evening sessions will not. And then on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, markets will be closed. And on Friday, the day after, They'll open at regular times, but they will close for the most part at 12 noon, 5 minutes after noon or 12 noon straight up. So make your marketing plans accordingly because of the market schedule that we are going into next week. On Friday, the cattle on feed report was issued, and it came out with numbers pretty much in line with what the trade was expecting. No big surprises there, and the number of cattle placed on feed down about 5% in the month of October. Number of cattle marketed up 5% from a year ago, and the number of cattle placed on feed pretty much unchanged from a year ago. So the cattle traders will be working on those numbers come the Monday trade. Coming up, we'll talk to a farmer from South Dakota. And these are some of the interviews we recorded a week ago at the convention of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting in Kansas City. So the conversations took place 2 days after the election was over. And so we'll check in to talk about the work of helping people understand what it takes to put food on the table when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. USFRA, the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance, the latest and I think the most successful thus far in helping non-farm consumers understand what it takes to put food on the table and a roof over their head and clothes on their back and now energy in the tank. We're going to talk about some of their recent developments with Brad Greenway. Brad raises a lot of products on his farm in South Dakota. So let's begin with what you do in production agriculture.
Well, thank you for having me on today. My wife Peggy and I, we have a diversified farm in South Dakota. So both crops and livestock raise corn, soybeans, wheat. We're by Mitchell, South Dakota, and then we're livestock. We have a cow-calf operation, and probably our main enterprise is our pig farm. And so my dad is 84. He's still on the home farm where Grandpa and Grandma come over from England. And so we're truly a family farm. We've got a great employee and two children, and my son just come back and is working into the farm also.
And the Corn Palace is still alive.
The Corn Palace still, and it's been newly updated. And so it's exciting to see if you haven't seen it for a while.
So let's talk about an event that just happened recently, and that's the naming of the Faces of Farming and Ranching. What is that program?
You know, the Faces of Farming, and last night at 5 o'clock, we announced a new class, the third class of Faces in Farming of Agriculture. And what that is we bring in young farmers from across the U.S., and we truly do. They're spread all across the U.S., and it truly is putting a face on agriculture. And so last night when we announced the class, they'll go through just a little bit of training, and then they're going to be available to not only affiliates of U.S. Farm and Ranch Alliance, but to venues wherever we can put there is an interest to put a face on farming. And so it could have one or two of them sitting on a panel. It could be at an event. And so it truly is showing that next generation, the excitement, the enthusiasm of the next generation coming back to farming. And this is our third class that we announced last night.
So can you give me an idea of their production in agriculture, what they're doing?
Yep, very, very well. We've got crop farmers. The one in Texas is actually a lot of cotton. So he grows both organic and GMO cotton. We have a person that's a crop farmer but also raises sheep. We've got a gal that is the farrowing manager for a hog farm that is in Ohio. We have a dairy person from Wisconsin, a gal that runs her and her family run a 260-cow dairy in Wisconsin. And so not only covering all the different crops that are raised across, but also the species of livestock. And so that's just a snippet of what they raise on their farms.
And then you have the SMART program. Tell me about that.
You know, the new SMART program or the SMART Farm Initiative going forward is, as we looked at this as U.S. Farm and Ranch Alliance, and everybody can relate to your smartphone, your smart home, smart TV, we thought it was a way of connecting with consumers about the technology that is used on the farms to be more precise in everything we do. And to us, that relates back to sustainability. You know, are we being precise in taking care of our environment, the water, the air? And so smart technology is all across, and in every business, and farming is no different. And so tying the farm and ranch faces back with SMART, I mean, think of the next generation. And so it's so exciting right now that we're technology we're using on the farm, not only in crops, but on livestock. And we thought it was a way to relate back to consumers how farming has changed and why, and for very good reason.
I've said many times, if you are first or second generation off the farm, you really don't know anything about farming today.
Exactly right. And I'll tell you, we just need to get our message out, how farms have changed and how we're doing things to help protect the environment and animal care and for food safety and all those great things. And again, I have an opportunity, we're, you know, into our fourth generation on our farm, is to be able to work with my dad and have my son there and be right in the combine with my dad, and we talk about how things have changed just in the last 10 years, you know, and what he's seen over his life. And we're continuing to improve every day on the farm on what we do, and I think we just need to get that great message out of the continuous improvement that farmers are doing and the reason we do that. But sometimes it's hard for farmers to want to talk about that and do that, and that's what we need to continue to improve.
Finally, Brad, what if people who are listening or watching want to get involved?
You know, U.S. Farm and Ranch Alliance, and we're very proud of that. It's a six-year-old organization. We started out with six or seven core that knew that we had to unify the message of agriculture. Right now, we have 100 affiliates with U.S. Farm and Ranch Alliance, continuing to grow. And so you can look up U.S. Farm and Ranch Alliance if you'd like to become part, if you'd like to have somebody come, one of our new faces, to speak to your group and get the message, or Randy Krutz, our CEO. It's really growing, and it's exciting times for U.S. Farm and Ranch Alliance.
That's Brad Greenway. As you heard, he's a farmer putting food on your table and clothes on your back and a roof over your head and energy in the tank. U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. And we talk about that a great deal throughout the year because it's a program that I think is doing good work. Well, we're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show. That means we'll take a break, and then we'll come back to share Samuelson Says and also to talk markets with Joe Camp of AgriVisor on the morning show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Thank you very much, Roger. The Saturday Morning Show. And in a few minutes, Max Armstrong will be talking to Joe Camp with AgriVisor, talking about markets as we go into the holiday period of 2016. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson. This week, suggesting more people should read the U.S. Constitution. But before we get to that, the folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier and more enjoyable with a family of professional strength cleaning products, products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves those ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color-fast fabrics and carpets, and the little brown bottle has been around now since 1947, and it's still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check them out at whink.com. I was really disturbed earlier this month. No, not on Election Day. I was very upset on Friday, November 11, Veterans Day, when our tribute to veterans was overshadowed by a group in cities across the nation protesting the election of Donald Trump as the 45th President of the United States. Media devoted far more attention to the protests than to our veterans. And I understand the right to protest in this country. As a matter of fact, it's one of our many freedoms guaranteed by the sacrifice of people who have served in the military, many of them making the ultimate sacrifice. But protesting by blocking roadways, interfering with people's daily schedules, overturning automobiles, breaking storefront windows, and taking attention from veterans on their day is not the way to make your point. If you think protests will change the outcome of the election, then you obviously skipped history in all of your grade levels. Many of the protesters were college students who I think should be spending a lot more time in the classroom studying history and the U.S. Constitution. I am not a college professor. I am not even a college graduate, but I do know this. Since America was born, the Constitution has stipulated that every 4 years we will vote for a president. And in every election, there will be a winner and there will be a loser. And no amount of protesting will change that. So get over it. After the election, time for the losers to accept that fact and start working on getting their choice elected 4 years from now. It's also time for the winners to start working to unite the nation and look for ways to work together so the nation can move forward here at home and in the world. Oh, and two more things. We talk about baby boomers and millennials, but I think we have added a new group, the entitlement group, who think because they live in America, they are entitled to a free college education, a free cell phone, free food, and whatever, because America owes them that. Well, how about hard work and long days to achieve the lifestyle you want? If you are truly in need, I'll help you. But you are not entitled if you won't work for it. Oh, and finally, a word to the celebrities who said they would leave the country if Trump was elected. Well, do what you said you would do. Leave now. And I, for one, will not miss you a bit. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. Standing by to talk markets, Max Armstrong and his guest, Joe Camp, when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Joe Camp from Agrivisor to talk with us this weekend about markets. Is there anything happening now in the wake of that November crop report that had such big numbers?
It's quiet all of a sudden. We're getting into the winter lull, it seems. Not a lot of fresh fundamental news at all. So what we're seeing are the grains moving toward taking on their guidance from first the technicals, what's going on the charts. Somewhat negative in the interim, but ultimately we have seen a good move, a bottoming action out of recent lows. So take some guidance from the charts and then also from these outside markets. Still reacting to the election, still a lot going on with a strong dollar up to decade highs here. That's keeping a lid on commodities and the grains too, but a lot of action outside of our normal supply and demand fundamentals, at least as it relates to the grains.
Was the strengthening of the dollar to the degree that we've seen anticipated, I mean, after the election?
In part, yes, because we are still expecting interest rates to rise, and that goes along with a higher dollar. But in part, no, because what we had expected to see was that if we had a surprise outcome with our election, as we did, we could see an initial hammering of that, some loss of confidence, some capital outflows. But instead, what we're seeing now is some optimism over the potential for our U.S. economy, some pro-growth fiscal policy maybe to come out of the new presidential administration. And so we are seeing some money flow into our dollar, not just because of the U.S., but also because of some outside market consideration. Emerging markets not doing quite as well after the presidential election. And also there's some Brexit fears resurfacing, and that's not boding well for the euro and the pound, but it is friendly for our dollar.
Just digressing a little bit, I guess if there was any message that was a consistent one, and there weren't many from the Trump campaign, one was this talk about the infrastructure and his desire, President-elect Trump's desire to spend and spend and spend on infrastructure, which many farmers would probably cheer because we see what's happening to the highways. We see the need to address the river system. But that, again, is talking about generating economic activity, and maybe that has figured into the strength of the dollar as well?
Yeah, that's a major market impact, the pro-growth fiscal policy that might come out of the new administration, because that can be inflationary. And so what we'll see is if the inflation expectations lead to capital to flow into the commodity space and investors seeking a hedge against said inflation? And also, will heightened inflation expectations maybe put a damper, though, on that dollar long term if we do see inflation rise in a way that kind of counteracts the otherwise friendly dollar motivators that we're seeing?
What is the feeling about how long the dollar could stay strong like this? I mean, is there any lesson to be learned from past events of this nature?
Well, we're seeing an index, a spot dollar index, that's back above 100, a level that's not seen since 2003. There is a ways to go before we hit all-time highs, though. So we could continue to see strength as long as we see weakness in the emerging market economies and as long as we see some concern about the economies in Europe. In particular, we'll continue to see some money flow into the U.S. Chasing some of these, optimistic economy storylines. And for that reason, we could still have some dollar strength to go yet.
But if I did the math correctly there, just hearing what you were saying, it's the strongest dollar in 13 years.
That's right. And we could continue to see that rise again because we haven't seen all-time highs. But in 13 years, this is saying something for our commodity space. It says a lot about how we've pursued monetary policy over the past decade and a half. And it says a lot, or it will say a lot, about where our markets are going to travel going forward.
It really makes it a struggle for us to sell against the competition, does it not? Because it makes our grain more expensive.
Yeah, you got it. Exactly that. A stronger dollar makes our goods that we're shipping out less attractive to world buyers because they're more expensive. And if the dollar rises, of course, you're seeing currency pairings on the other side fall. And a lot of those currencies that are falling are in the hands of our major export competitors, say those in South America.
Now, I did see a story this week about Mexican buying of our corn. Now, it had dropped off significantly because of the weakening of the peso versus the dollar. They're right next door to us. Where else would they go for their corn? And they have a very healthy appetite for corn. But, I mean, simply by logistics, with the proximity right next to us, aren't we still, generally speaking, the big game in town for corn sales into Mexico?
Generally speaking, we are the biggest game in town, and we should continue to see Mexico be a good buyer of U.S. corn. They have been the top buyer of U.S. corn over the past couple of seasons, surpassing what is sometimes the top spot for Japan. But we will watch that peso, because if it drops any further, they will have to look to their neighbors in the south to source some grain because of the impediments that the currency terms have, which right now are leaning negative for the Mexicans wanting to buy our corn.
To the south, you meant Argentina and Brazil?
That's right. Yes, our southern neighbors there. And also, in a big way, you can turn to the Black Sea exporters, say Ukraine.
They're quite a ways away. But still, if the exchange allows for that much of a difference, it could still make them competitive, Ukraine with us, even though we're right next to Mexico?
Yeah, you got it with this, the way the currency terms are working here. Again, that's a sort of a last resort thing and not something we'd expect to see. I would expect to see the peso stabilize here in the coming months and so make it so that U.S. corn is still attractive to those buyers south of our border.
Let's talk about that category of feeding, where our grain winds up in the bellies of hogs and cattle and chickens and turkeys. The poultry industry continues to expand, does it not, Joe?
It does, and we've seen expansion in cattle and hog herds, too. We're talking about livestock markets price-wise that are at multi-year lows here. Not friendly when we look at the board prices for, say, cattle and hogs like we do on a regular basis. But the result being that we've got an oversupply of those animals, and that's a friendly thing, though, for our grain markets because of the sheer massive volume of feed input that is required to feed these growing herds. Yeah, something that should continue to be supportive for our market.
That is sometimes difficult, is it not, that level of feeding? We get a handle to some extent on animal units, but it seems like the market often struggles to know just how much is being put in those bellies.
Yes, very difficult. We can look to the USDA, for example, that crop production, and then ultimately those numbers flowing into the WASDE reports and the supply and demand numbers. The feed is attached to an and residual number there, right? So USDA just doesn't have the data yet. There are private estimates on a regular basis, grain-consuming animal units that we try to track closely. But it is just quite frankly difficult.
Is there the potential for any kind of a surprise there that you see, say, over the next 60, 90 days?
Surprises would have to come from South American weather. Right now, we know that the growers in Argentina and the growers in Brazil are shaping up to have big crops, but we can keep an eye on weather in Brazil that has leaned slightly dry and then weather in Argentina that has run a little bit too wet. Will we, won't we have a La Nina that develops? If we do, that could be a market shock, one that's positive for prices.
La Nina, if it develops, you're saying would be positive. And lest we forget, there can be a shock in the system there in South America very late in the season, as we saw earlier this year.
That's right. We saw this year that Brazil's second corn crop was damaged by drought, and then Argentina, when they were trying to get their soybean crop out of the ground, it just would not stop raining. So, yes, late in the season, we can still see a weather impact, and if La Nina comes, it sounds like it will be late in the season.
Although it's very preliminary to be looking ahead toward the planting season of 2017, we're hearing that the soybean acreage should gain on corn, should it not? And it's simply a matter of you're losing less putting in beans than you're losing putting in corn.
Right now, the estimate has it a rough switch, 3 to 4 million acres from corn to soybeans. But there are those that are on the extreme thinking we could get corn acres down to 88 million, soybeans up to 88 million acres planted next season. Yeah, it's a simple choice of economics here. We're seeing that from a farm profitability standpoint, soybeans still take the cake over corn. And so we're seeing those decisions made. Even, you know, bankers saying, let's look at our profitability. Let's look at our balance sheet. Let's think about planting more soybeans. Might not be the biggest amount of switching here in the I states, but if we go to the fringe areas where they're planting a lot less wheat, they're looking for something to provide profitability, soybeans will certainly be attractive in the season ahead.
Joe, thank you for your time and your expertise. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much.
Joe Camp with AgriVisor.
We're 5 minutes away from news time here on WGN Radio, but as we approach the week of Thanksgiving, if you're serving Thanksgiving dinner at home, you're doing it for less than $5 a person. Now, Gloria and I are fortunate enough to have friends who invite us to their home for Thanksgiving Day dinners, so we don't shop for the ingredients. But every year for the last 31 years, the American Farm Bureau has, across the country, gone to various supermarkets and priced items that would go into a meal for 10 people. And as I say, I haven't gone out to a restaurant for Thanksgiving dinner for a long time, but I'm guessing that cost could be anywhere from $30 to $60 or $75 a person. But if you do all the work at home, it will cost you less than $5 a person, because this year the average cost of a meal for 10 is $49.87. That's a 24-cent decline from last year's average. That was a little bit above $50. The big ticket item, a 16-pound turkey, came in at a total of $22.74 this year. That's roughly $1.42 per pound, and that's a decrease of 2 cents a pound, or a total of 30 cents for a whole turkey compared to 2015. Other foods showing the largest declines this year, in addition to turkey: pumpkin pie mix, milk, a vegetable tray composed of celery and carrots. But again, something for which we can all be thankful, living in a country where America's farmers and ranchers can produce quality, nutritious food in abundance and do it at a relatively low price. If you're willing to do the work at home, less than $5 a person. So happy Thanksgiving and enjoy the holiday. I talk a great deal about college students looking for scholarships, because there are a lot of scholarships available. And this week, across my desk, came a news release from the Irrigation Foundation announcing the new irrigation scholarship program. And in order to meet the eligibility requirements, applicants must be currently enrolled at a U.S. technical or vocational school, community college, university, or similar institution of higher learning and be a U.S. citizen. The scholarship will be awarded in amounts ranging from $1,000 to $2,500 based on candidates' letters of intent, financial need, reference letters, resumes, and transcripts. But again, another organization providing scholarships for young people in agriculture. Well, that's our time for this Saturday morning, and we always appreciate your coming along with us for this get-together to talk markets and to talk other subjects that deal with putting food on your table, really. And as we begin the trading week next week, which will be a 3.5-day trading week, we'll find December wheat starting the week at $4.08 a bushel, December corn at $3.82, January soybeans at $9.93¾, and the December hog contract will start the week at $47.80 a hundredweight, December live cattle $108.32, and January feeder cattle will start the shortened trading week at $124.97 a hundredweight. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.